Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings. From premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts, start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode of The Swole Patrol is brought to you by Care/Of for 25% off your first month of personalized care of vitamins. This stuff is fantastic. I use it myself. It's a great, great service. Visit takecareof.com. Enter Swole. That's 25% off.
S-W-O-L-E. Swole.
That's right.
It's the Swole Patrol. It's the Swole Patrol. Lick my balls and suck on my asshole. It's Chris Bell, and he is so super buff. He used to be fat, but now he's shredded, because he eats lots of meat and lifts heavy weights, and you should do the same. And we'll talk about Kratom making you healthy, and you won't want to take pills and ruin your life anymore.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. You've been around Jason too much. Jason,
why do
Alex,
you say that?
Opening with...
lick my balls and suck on my asshole?
Yes, that seemed like a little... You got a little south on us.
It's all right. Just soften up.
Okay.
It's all good.
Okay.
All
fair good. Enough. As I mentioned earlier in that beautiful little ditty that I sang, Chris Bell is back, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm here.
Chris Borbell.
First of all, that song was absolutely incredible.
Thank you.
I don't know who writes your lyrics for you.
He spontaneously does them. He doesn't know what he's going to
say. That was freestyle?
Oh, yeah.
Full freestyle.
If I think of anything, it ruins it. I have to just...
It started a little south, so that's unusual. It usually goes south.
Yeah, I like
it. It started south. I thought, oh, that's Jason.
He ramped up a little bit.
Well, he brought himself back.
Yeah, I led with the Widowmaker and then just worked the body a little bit.
I think you need a new career. It kind of reminds me of Gary Shandling's show, the way it used to open.
Yeah, like saying, a different...
This is the theme, the Gary show. It was just so, like, he's just singing what's going on.
That's right.
What
just
you're doing.
Kind of a stream of consciousness. Perfect. As they say. It's been a while since we talked to you. You've actually gotten in better shape in just the 6 months or so it's been since you've been here.
Thank you.
It's really remarkable. We were talking a little bit before the podcast about how someone like you who has always been into fitness culture but had let yourself go, admittedly, to see the redemption, the comeback, it's almost more impressive to me than someone who was always fat. And that's not to belittle people who were always obese and then lose weight. It's a tremendous achievement, and you should be proud of yourself. But to me, I find it's like someone who is wealthy – and then went bankrupt, for them to pull themselves back out of it, I find it's even more impressive than someone who was always broke, you know, making that $1 million.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I mean, I think I let myself go because of pain, mm-hmm. You know, and that's what we're going to talk about today mainly. I was in a lot of pain. I had double hip replacement surgery. I got addicted to the drugs that I was given to, you know, sort of recover from that. And admittedly, that a lot of that was my fault. I liked the way that they felt. Because I was in a lot of pain. So once I started taking them and I started taking more of them, I actually liked the way it felt. Mm-hmm. And that just turned me into a completely different person. I learned a lot coming out of that.
Now, I mean, I don't want to speak out of turn because I'm just a drug addict. Drew's someone who has scientific knowledge about the disease of addiction. But I would go as far to say that it wasn't your fault. That's what those drugs are designed to do, to relieve pain, and you enjoyed the relief of pain.
Well, it's iatrogenic. Yeah. I would flip it a little bit and say that never would have happened had it not been people that manage pain going, oh, no, you need this. Let's take more of this. All right, it feels good. I'll do what the doctor says. What they don't tell you is after about 2 weeks, opiates make pain.
Yeah.
They perpetuate pain. They intensify pain. They cause back pain. They cause headache, and they amplify whatever pain you're trying to treat in the first place.
The most interesting stop on this journey probably was actually, it was a pivotal time. And I don't even know if you remember it because you've done so many episodes, but we did an episode of Loveline where I was talking about my movie Prescription Thugs, and I came in to see you guys. And you had told me there was a study where they looked at well, first of all, you told me that opioids after a while can increase your pain.
Dramatically.
I had no idea. And then you told me that there was
By the way, that was well before the public got wind of the opiate epidemic.
Oh, absolutely.
What was happening here. And I'd been saying it for 10 years before that.
You're saying my colleagues just, you know, cause this.
Just listen to me, everybody. I know what this is. It's so obvious. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, and the interesting thing was you told me that you can get better pain relief out of, you know, taking Advil and Tylenol. There was a study on that from the National Safety Council. And so when I looked it up, and I did that, but of course I'm an addict, you know, so I was taking a lot of Advil and Tylenol a day. I got a couple of phone calls from friends of mine, three different friends that are all bodybuilders. So this could be a bodybuilder thing. I don't really know, but they were taking heavy NSAIDs, Advil, and taking a lot of it. They were real lot of it. And they've had – there's three guys that I know that had kidney transplants.
Oh, absolutely. They're horrible for your kidneys.
And
There's at least five different common kidney injuries from me.
Now, that doesn't reflect on you saying, hey, to take this instead. I was just saying that I
– Taken properly.
Yeah, exactly. I took it like a maniac and realized, wow, this could be really damaging.
Well, very dangerous for your stomach and your kidneys.
To my body. And then I came across Kratom, which my new movie, A Leaf of Faith, is about, and found out that didn't have, you know, so far as far as the research goes, there was no liver or kidney toxicity with it.
There was nothing like that.
There was no issues with it that would cause me further harm. So
I did see some study recently on people – obviously, people get going with it and escalate to high dose.
Absolutely.
I think some seizures or something I was reading about. But again, used properly.
Yeah. So I found this plant, Kratom, which comes from Southeast Asia. Doesn't seem to have those effects.
So do the best hookers.
They have side effects.
That's for damn sure.
Potentially.
And, you know, it's been really great for me. So my mission and my goal with A Leaf of Faith was to get more money for research, to get more people involved. One of the big stops along the way was Joe Rogan. He's been instrumental, and he likes it himself. He likes to take it before stand-up routines and before UFC fights just to give him some energy and get kind of pumped up. So he uses it more in a recreational way, as a lot of people do. But he was very instrumental in getting a lot of people to look at the issue when I went on there. And then you know, shortly after that Rogan episode, there was a vote to keep it legal. And 23,000 people, I think, wrote in from the Joe Rogan show. 23 angry Rogan fans wrote in and said, like, hey, you should keep this legal. And I think that was a big part of it. The DEA decided not to schedule it and to keep it around. And then this year, it's just coming back around again. Now it's the FDA, and they're going after it full bore. And but the National Institute on Drug Abuse just gave the University of Florida $3.5 million to study this. So I think we hopefully are at the end of the trying to ban it and are into the, like, let's study this.
I think generally there's been a little shift away from this idea that there's bad molecules, right? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That with the legalization of cannabis and with the idea that there was a study last week that showed that prescription heroin works for heroin addicts. They're not looking at heroin as a bad molecule, just looking at these are molecules that humans have relationships with, that have certain side effects, that have certain risk potentials, and have certain therapeutic values that we need to look into.
Yeah.
Hallucinogens are being actively researched now, finally.
It's crazy. I keep telling people, it's like, just say yes. It's like all these drugs that we were told are so bad.
Well, they're all risky, but we don't even know the risk yet.
Yeah.
We haven't researching.
And obviously, like, different doses.
Look, you brought up at the beginning of the thing, non-steroidals are risky.
Yeah.
Tylenol, I could kill you with 8 Tylenol. Easy.
Hey now,
yeah.
I got a question, Drew. This may be a little off topic, but isn't Tylenol one of the main kind of vehicles with Vicodin?
Yeah.
How is it that I can watch people take 50 Vicodin?
It's a really, really interesting phenomenon. And I've seen literally people, doctors in a courtroom go, this patient can't possibly take 50 Vicodin because their liver would shut down. Yeah. It's impossible. And I go, No, my average patient takes 50 Vicodin.
Yeah.
I watch them take it. I have guys taking 100 Vicodin. It's because your liver can adjust its metabolism in such a way as to ramp up an enzymatic machinery that will break down Tylenol into a non-toxic compound.
Wow.
And there's something about the way people escalate Vicodin. You don't go right to 50.
Sure.
You start at 2, and then 2, it's every 3, and then 4, every 6, or whatever it might be. The rate at which people escalate oral opiates gives the liver enough of a chance to adjust. Of the many, many thousands of opiate addicts I've dealt with, I've seen one case of liver toxicity. One.
Wow. Yeah, they're not. It's they're not that bad on the organs, right? I mean, as
opiates,
far as
we're distinguishing opiates and the Tylenol.
Yeah,
opiates. When opiates were when morphine sulfate came into being at the turn of the century, it was a major breakthrough because it had no adverse effect on anything, except maybe some constipation, and it could eliminate human suffering.
That's
so,
why
so it's why there was a first epidemic of opiates in 1890, and it was also. Doctor perpetrated.
You know what?
And we're making all the same fucking mistakes.
And here's bro science, but look at every heroin addict you've ever met.
Yeah.
Okay. That's pulled themselves through. They all look amazing. All my friends, my friends are stimulant addicts like myself. We were fucking a mess.
Stimulants are bad.
Me and Sizemore, we look like we've been run through the mill. I look like you took Mario Lopez and put him in a trash compactor. here, let me go down the list. God rest his soul, Chris Cornell. When he died, he looked beautiful at 50 something. Dave Navarro. Anthony Kiedis.
All the opiate addicts.
Anthony Kiedis, Robert Downey Jr. Just go down the list of opiate addicts. If you come out of it alive, you look fucking amazing.
Correct. So
yeah,
that,
you don't look like an alcoholic.
No.
Right. Alcohol so this is the point that people miss. It causes the most dangerous form of addiction, doesn't harm anything. When you do. Bob
was a polysubstance user.
Yeah, Bob was a poly drug. And got hepatitis C and all those other things. So that's my next point, is that when an IV heroin addict looks bad, it's because of the infectious diseases they get from IV injecting. So it's HIV, it's hepatitis C, it's staph infections, endocarditis, all that kind of stuff.
Getting back to kratom,
So let me say something about kratom just to start out. I have no object to anything being used for people at work. We need an array of stuff, whether it's cannabis or kratom or buprenorphine. The problem we have, here's the problem from the clinical standpoint. We don't know the long-term effects, and we don't know how to select the right patient. We don't know yet who we should be using kratom on, who we should be using cannabis on, who we should be using buprenorphine on, who we should be using nothing on, and make sure they go completely clean. That's literally each one of those should be a different patient profile.
Just like each diet is for a different
patient. And I completely agree with you.
We just don't know how to do that yet.
Yeah. But I also feel like we're in this trap. Like it's hard to go to the doctor and get, you know, it's hard to go to the doctor and go through this thing of like, well, I'm in pain, and then, you know, what are they going to give you, and what are you going to get, and whatever, right? And you
they
play
should
this.
Be thinking about stuff like this.
Yeah.
They should be thinking about cannabis.
See, they don't.
Be, all
they
that
don't,
stuff should be thinking.
They're
in their
not
head.
Thinking about
I
those
know
things,
that.
Right?
So
they're
they don't,
put me
because
on,
we don't have the research yet to we have to have evidence to make our recommendations. We don't have the evidence yet.
Exactly. So there's a disconnect there, right? Like, we need to do more research so that doctors can actually prescribe it and talk about it. And
so
we
live in a time, and a lot of the medical literature talks about this, where the public is way ahead of doctors in their use of pharmacotherapies of over the counter type, recreational type. And so we're all just standing back like we can't say anything because the legalities are too profound.
The
for
emails
us.
I get are amazing because from just people that want to use kratom. I think most people don't understand that I can't give medical advice.
Right.
They like every day I get, how much should I take? You know, what kind should I take? What, you know, and I get these questions, and so I'd rather answer them in general on, you know, places like this, because there is no amount to take.
No.
There hasn't been anything.
Keep it low. It's a weak opiate. Yeah. If you're a heroin addict, don't take it.
Yeah,
I would say that's a pretty simple move. If you're a meth addict and you have chronic pain and you've tried everything else, or even if you're an opiate addict and you don't want to try buprenorphine and you're really disabled by pain, it's a reasonable move. Cannabis is a reasonable move too.
Yeah.
The one thing a lot of people don't try, and actually this is very interesting. It's something that has made me – it goes back to what Mike was talking about. It made me able to realize my full potential, I guess, and it could be a placebo effect, but somehow it worked for me. I was never able to practice what I preach. So I always preached health and fitness, but I was kind of this fat power lifter that couldn't really – figure out how to regulate his own metabolism. And by getting into kratom and taking better care of my body and taking away drugs and artificial things and even stuff like caffeine I had pulled out of my diet for a while, I just, you know, tried to figure out how to get healthy. And when I figured out
imagine
how to get
that.
Healthy,
imagine that.
a lot of the pain started to go away.
Imagine that.
So my first recommendation over anything like kratom or even NSAIDs is if you're in pain and you say that you've tried everything, have you tried to change your diet? And I think the number one thing that people need to know is grains and sugars cause a lot of inflammation in our body. We don't need to go on a full-on carnivore diet, which is an all-meat diet, which I do, and you've been practicing a little bit yourself. But you don't necessarily have to go that far. I think even there's an anti-inflammatory paleo protocol. There's several, you know, anti-inflammatory diets that people can do and try.
Although the paleo, I'm sorry, the carnivore, like Jordan Peterson is on carnivore. His daughter had horrible disabling arthritis resolved with carnivore. My hunch, I have a hunch, and I can't prove this, but my hunch is a major piece of the anti-inflammatory effect of carnivore is the elimination of central adipose. Because this is an inflammatory organ.
For those we know listening that is over your head, he's talking about belly fat.
Yeah. We know that this is an inflammatory thing. And no grain, no sugars, no starch really is effective at helping you get – it's the most effective way of getting rid of this thing.
I had all my weight in my belly.
Yeah.
It was all in my stomach.
Guys carry it. You know, women in their ass and their thighs, guys, it's around the belly button.
Yeah,
you know?
from drinking mainly. And
genetics. You know, I'm genetically set up that way, and so that's where it goes.
But I noticed going on a carnivore diet, I have abs for the first time.
Right.
Like, why is that? You know, it's like, oh, well, it's got rid of all this visceral fat.
That's right. Well, it's not the visceral. You can't see that. But central
what do we
fat.
Call that?
Central obesity.
Belly
central,
fat?
Central fat. Obesity. Central yeah. I call it belly fat. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's
so,
up? Susan's what's
Drew's
the
like a 20-year-old now. I want a picture of all your abs at the end of this podcast.
You guys don't.
We got to go to tanning booth first.
Who is that? Mike Safe on about 3 or 4 weeks ago. He's a competitive men's physique.
Oh yeah.
You do not want to compare abs with that.
No, I don't.
Holy shit! It looked like a joke, right, Drew? When he pulled up his shirt, I thought Susan was going to pass out.
Yeah, I'm not completely there yet. I still have, you know, it's funny because I still have this like jiggly body fat on my lower belly, and I always complain about it. I was like, dude, you look so much better, like,
yeah,
but
yeah.
It still annoys me. You know,
yeah,
you
yeah,
still want to get
well, and that's you gotta take into consideration and understand you dug your own grave with that by getting so heavy to begin with. You know,
some of it is laxity. As we get older, there's some laxity of the soft tissue. It sort of looks like there's fat there. It may not even be.
And a lot of times that just takes time to go away.
You were
going
to ask me something. I interrupted you. You started to...
I was going to ask you about your the effects of the carnivore diet for you.
Remarkable. Just immediately, like in 3 days. Like
so just beyond physique, beyond having abs.
Something's happening right now where I'm not as happy with it. I'm not sure why. But for the first...
Eating too much.
Probably. First, no, I'm not, though.
Yes, you are.
Maybe.
What's your
as compared to before, I'm not.
Time out. What's your complaint? You're saying something's happened.
Right,
so what is that
we'll get into it, but let me answer Chris's question. Yeah, I just had a colonoscopy. But in the first 3 days, I was like, what? What's going on?
Yeah.
And I stayed that way for about 3 months, and I think ketosis was the main advantage at that point. And then I was sleeping better, more energy, more strength, more everything better. I could tell testosterone was up. I could just tell. I just felt more like myself, you know. But in the last – I'm doing it for like 4 or 5 months. But the last 3 or 4 weeks, I don't know. Something's not the same. Yeah, maybe the holidays. I don't know.
Yeah. I could see it maybe having an effect where like over time it could – you know, it could change.
Wane,
where,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, like it could, you have to jump it up or something.
Maybe just, go on something a little bit more normal for a while and then go back to it.
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
And things like that.
That's kind of what it feels like. That's why I was saying I was going to liberalize my carbohydrate intake.
A lot of times,
sometimes
I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to have a sweet potato today. And I'll have a sweet potato. I'll put like, you know, a little bit of butter on it. Not like a ton, but like, you know, something like that.
Well, that's the other thing, which is Mike getting at. I don't eat enough fat. I eat too much protein. And that gets converted to sugar eventually. You know,
yeah.
If you really overload the
system. Yeah, but every time I try to give him some recommendations on fat, he goes, I don't know.
Well, I don't like coconut oil. I don't like
not
well,
coconut
what,
oil.
What
you
about
fuck
fat?
For 50,000 times.
Meat?
I try to eat fatty meats. I do. I eat bacon.
I'm telling you, you're getting enough fat. If you're eating eggs every day and full fat meat, you're eating ribeye and T-bone as opposed to leaner cuts.
Correct.
You're getting enough fat.
You're actually better off eating more protein because of protein leveraging. You know, your body. Like,
well, I think it pushes your stoichiometry in a certain direction. So hopefully towards building.
A thing that a lot of people don't know is why we get so hungry all the time and why everybody's hungry is we have a certain set point. Every species on the planet has a protein requirement, And if we don't get to that protein requirement, we're going to overeat carbohydrates and we're going to overeat fat. So figuring out what your protein level is, it's usually around like, I think it's like 1.7. I think it's 1.7 per kg of body weight, which I don't know what it is in pounds. But anyway, people can look that up. It's the concept or the hypothesis of protein leveraging. If you get enough protein in per day, your body's not going to be looking for other things.
Yes, that's really the great thing about this diet.
It's seeking out amino acids, and it's seeking out the full array of amino acids.
And I think some people are even more in need than others, and I need it.
So, well, yeah, you're a weightlifter.
But back to you had it off the air. We were talking about whether it's a good thing or not. I still can't recommend it as a, you know, because again, we don't have the data yet.
Yeah.
I tell people, don't do what I'm doing. I'm doing it, and you know, here's my experience. And it's probably very, very different, you know, a 60-year-old like me doing it where I drive a ton of benefit, where the risk of being on this for a long period of time, I'm not going to be on it for 30 years, you know.
It's tough for me. A lot of people ask, like, hey, should I do the carnivore diet? Right? And it's like, do you want to, you know, like, and so rather than necessarily, like, recommend, I usually ask a couple questions, like, are you in pain? Are you overweight? You know, what is the reason? There's some people that hit me up, like a guy hit me up the other day and said, I'm 600 pounds. I need help.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm like, here's my phone number. Here's my email. Help you as much as you want for free because you need help. Mm. Like, if you don't get help, you could die.
Oh, yeah.
And what I recommended to him, I was like, you're not going to like this, but I think you should just eat all meat. Guy sends me back a picture of, like, 12 burgers, like, stacked up. And he's like, I'm ready to go, you know. And it's like, he's a big guy.
It's a start.
He's a big guy, right? Like, I'm like, in the beginning, you know, we've seen people eat as much as they want and still continue to lose weight.
Yeah.
And after a while, what happens, your body just regulates all that and says, I don't need this much. And you end up calorie restricting anyway. And I think most of these diets, I think as far as I've found, all of these diets are a way to restrict calories in some sort of way. You may be able to get away with eating a little more calories on like something like a carnivore diet, but I think in a way that it all comes down to caloric restriction because the longer I stay on it, the less I eat, it seems like.
That's kind of what I'm experiencing now.
And maybe that's why it wears off a little
bit. It's not hyper-palatable. Like I'm always reticent to speak on things with expertise because I don't have expertise. But one thing I do have expertise in is regulating intake and calorie restriction and things like that. If you are eating hyper-palatable things, such as starches, such as bread, pasta, and any obviously sweets, these are things that are – rice. These are hyper-palatable. They're easy to digest and they go in quickly and your body finds them – incredibly favorable to your taste buds. It's very, very difficult to overeat meat.
Yeah.
It's very difficult. No, I know. And I think that that's why ketogenic diets and the carnivore as well, people find so much success. When just from weight loss alone, people find success because they don't have to think too much about not overeating. They just don't overeat.
That's right.
Well, it's that protein leveraging thing I talked about. You get your protein in, you also get a required amount of fat, and then you're full.
Yeah.
And you have nowhere else to go. And so for me, that's gone a long way in regulating pain, getting rid of all the inflammation in my body and sort of just, you know, dispelling it out. And along with kratom and the carnivore diet, I also use stuff like CBD or Mariva curcumin. I've found the most benefit, though, to be with the kratom and the diet.
Yeah, CBD, I've seen some – I had a weird reaction. My wife had a weird reaction. She had a weird reaction to it.
I couldn't sleep.
Really? I have trouble sleeping with it, too.
I go to sleep. Attack when I went
and she had a panic attack, you know.
The next day, I couldn't focus. I felt like I was going through menopause again.
Hmm.
I just totally not focused and couldn't finish a project.
Well, you were panicking too.
Anxiety.
Yeah.
It was weird. Somebody on Facebook wants to know about becoming a vegan, a plant-based diet, as opposed to carnivore.
This is the eternal question.
Oh, and Tupperware lady says hi.
Yeah!
Oh, Kathleen!
Tupperware lady!
She came on right at the beginning.
Kathleen is
hi, Kathleen.
If she's still here, I don't know.
So that's a story for another day.
Well, you know, it's funny because like I was eating bacon and beef forever, and at Thanksgiving I was really at my all-time high weight because I don't work out every day. And I was eating high protein and trying to keep my calories down and everything. And the red meat thing, it just wasn't working for me. And I went on a diet where I just eat white meat and vegetables and fruit. And I lost 7 pounds in 1 week.
And you're restricting calories too.
Yeah, but I was doing that with the carnivore, and yeah. It wasn't working for me because I'm not lifting weights every day.
I feel like it's what works for you, and I feel like that's what we all need to find, right?
I mean, I've been on high protein diets before where I just had nothing but protein. I went into ketosis. I did Lindora, and I used to lose weight really easy with that. But I'd get these little protein bars and these little shakes, and you'd eat it, you know, in between. And
you need structure.
To,
yeah, you do.
Yeah, and I need to have calories in, calories out.
Yeah, she likes counting calories.
I think that's the beauty of this. Like, there are different ways to get there. There's several different ways to get there.
And
you know?
This brings up another issue too, the vegan question, which is, please, everybody, you got to understand the way clinical research is done. It asks a question and then attempts to answer that question with specific experimental designs. For instance, is wine good for your heart? Yes, it turns out a glass of wine is good for your heart. Is wine good for your survival? No.
Yeah.
No. Is it good for everybody? No. Even people that become alcoholics because of that recommendation, it's still good for their hearts.
Yeah.
But they die. And so they don't ask the question, is wine going to increase your survival over time? They ask, is it good for your heart? Yes. That doesn't mean it's good for you. Same thing is true of these diets. Is vegan diet good for your heart? Categorically. That data is over and over and over shown to be true. Does that mean it's good for everybody? Does it mean that it's good for the people like you and me, Chris, who have the central stuff that we need to get rid of that's probably our greatest risk to our heart? No, because I can't survive a vegan diet. I can't stick to it. I can't do it.
Well, and also you're talking about hyperpalatable foods.
I get sick from it. I literally have diarrhea every time.
To overeat on a vegan diet. I mean,
you know, I had incontinence and diarrhea on an airplane once thanks to trying to be on a vegan diet.
Vegan food.
I think a vegan diet a vegan diet gets to be tricky because it could be so many things.
Yes.
I don't have anything against veganism.
No, I don't either. But
I think it's fine if it's well formulated, but it also can be very poorly formulated, whereas a carnivore diet.
It's one thing.
There's no way to fuck it up.
It's red meat and water, and that's
it. There's no way to fuck it up.
When you look at a vegan diet, you can go into Whole Foods and you can buy all these like cakes and candies. And I'm not saying that's what vegans are doing, but
a lot do.
You can.
I have plenty of vegan friends that have man tits and big fucking bellies.
And
now, is that to say that is the case with veganism? Obviously not. Guys like Mike Mahler and Nima Delgado, who we're going to talk to,
they eat great
later today. I mean, they look amazing, and they're eating healthy fats and high protein. All the and veganism in and of itself obviously is not unhealthy. It's just that, as Chris is pointing out, there's a lot of different directions you can go under the umbrella of veganism. And to just say vegan is good is naive. Well,
it's like keto. Keto, you can do it terrible.
Yeah.
You can get so fat on keto, you know? So if you do it wrong and you're eating the wrong foods and not putting good quality ingredients into your diet, you're not going to do good either way. So I think either way that you go, we have to eat real whole foods from the earth. The best, the better, the more we can go towards not eating things with a nutrition label on them. Everybody's looking at the nutrition label. Look for things without a nutrition label.
Look for
foods that
don't come with it. Yeah,
like when you buy broccoli, does it have a label on it? Like, no, it doesn't have any label on it. When you buy meat, it doesn't have a label on it. It's just in a package. So just buy the things that you know are whole foods from the earth. And any way you go at that point, you really can't screw up.
I've noticed something. This is purely anecdotal. And I wonder what it is. I can't seem to put my finger on it. But I've seen enough cases where there is something there. In comparison to the regular ketogenic diet, something about the carnivore diet actually increases performance, whereas I've seen plenty of cases, and it's studied, that a ketogenic diet can decrease performance of things, anaerobic capacity, and it's great for endurance athletes. I've seen endurance athletes thrive on it. But
ketogenic
diet. I've seen endurance athletes; they can thrive on a ketogenic diet. You know, long.
I thought you had to shift into carbs at some point with that.
No, moderate pace, like long marathon pace, runners and things like that. Ironman.
It's
seen
great for mental clarity too.
But
which I love.
But as far as like running sprints, Olympic lifting, doing sprints on a rowing machine, ketogenic diets are disastrous.
Yeah, most people.
But I've seen three or four people who follow strict carnivore diets. And they're breaking records on rowing machines, and they're running
Sean
sprints.
Baker.
But
here's what I wonder is whether, because that's what I think is what's happening to me is I feel like my weightlifting is burning out a little bit. Like I need more carb for the explosive lifting.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, that just goes without saying. You're not going to find You're not going to find an MMA fighter. You're not going to find a boxer or an Olympic weightlifter or someone who has to do anything explosive. You're not going to find them on a low-carb diet. That's just not reality.
See, I've found completely different results with my lifting. My lifting has gone through the roof.
No, mine did too, but it's sort of now
it's coming back down a little bit.
Yeah.
Here, let me take a moment to tell you guys about something truly awesome. It's called Care Of, okay?
You do that, right?
I love
it. Susan does it too. The producer does it.
What it is a vitamin.
Why am I left out? Why am I not getting it?
Well, you can take the online quiz, Drew, which is what everyone has to do at Care Of. You go to takecareof.com.
There's an online quiz
there.
I go to takecareof.com.
Yes.
I fill out the quiz. Does it say quiz?
It's only like five, six minutes of your time.
Does it say quiz or just a questionnaire?
It's right there for you to take. It's an online quiz that you take, and it helps you. That you give them information about your lifestyle, your age, your gender, all that kind of stuff, and it gets into detail
about weightlifting and
the amount of training that you do, the type of training you do, and then they can then using a scientific board that they have that they've entrusted cater to you a specific packet that gets delivered right to your door of vitamins and minerals that you are probably in need of or might be not receiving enough of.
You know what I like about what you're saying is you're not leaving out the minerals, which most people do.
Absolutely.
And that's the main thing for me, man. I need those minerals.
You heard me. You heard me correctly. You get right delivered to your front door, a personalized, easy-to-remember daily packs. They all come in little self-sealed daily packs.
Perfect.
So if you're busy on-the-go lifestyle, you don't have to worry about caring about 11 different pills or anything like that.
What was yours? What kind of stuff did you get?
For bone health, I got a lot of some calcium stuff, and then a lot of digestive.
Magnesium.
Yeah, magnesium was.
I need the digestive stuff too.
And then
magnesium. I was thinking about that. I'm not getting enough magnesium. I was thinking about
some
that.
Digestive stuff.
I get a fair
stuff
for the meat. I guess
it's good for your sleep too.
Yeah, magnesium. Well, he used that stuff for sleep. Sometimes.
Yeah, and then you hit the nail on the head. I got a lot of stuff for anti-stress and sleep aids. Oh. You know, things like that. The natural, holistic stuff.
Cool.
Like what?
They just sent you everything.
They sent me the entire panel.
What's good for holistic for
things magnesium. Like Rhodolia rosea, or I forget if I'm saying
Rhodesia.
It's Rhodesia. Yeah, Rhodolia, and then ashwagandha, which is an ancient Ayurvedic herb, which has been proven in scientific ample.
So these guys give you herbs as well as vitamins.
Yeah, everything you can possibly need to help optimize your
Everybody's
lifestyle.
Everybody's taking ashwagandha right now.
Ashwagandha is
super
bomb.
Popular.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't even get that. I got biotin for my hair and magnesium and and a vitamin B pill.
I feel very left
out.
I'm angry, you guys.
And because I like to
this.
Drink, they gave me milk thistle.
And then also, if you're living a specialty lifestyle, then you're taken care of with Care Of. They've got vegan vegetarian supplements for anyone who is in need of that. Prenatal, postnatal.
Oh, nice.
All of that is taken care of at Care Of. So do yourself a favor if you're in need of vitamin and mineral supplementation. And look, 90% of people fall short of the FDA recommended guidelines when it comes to vitamin and mineral nutrients. Go to takecareof.com. Enter the code SWOLE, S-W-O-L-E, S-W-O-L-E. Go to takecareof.com. Put in Swole, and you get 25% off your first month of personalized care of vitamins and minerals. Our guest today on the Swole Patrol, the one and only Chris Bell, everybody. Stop what you're doing. Even if you're holding a baby, just throw that baby down and give him a round of applause. Extraordinary filmmaker, also avid weightlifter, weight trainer, and a proponent for Kratom and the carnivore diet, both. And you feel like they work synergistically. You know?
Yeah, that's why I'm talking about them at the same time, kind of. They just go hand in hand. You know, I think once you lower a little bit of inflammation with the diet, kill a little pain with the Kratom, and it helps you train a lot harder. It helps me train a lot harder.
Drew was bitching and moaning about his fallout with weight training.
Not fallout. Just
no, but there's been
a
decline.
Yeah.
Okay. You are a guy who has maintained a very low carb diet for a considerable amount of time. I mean, most people, that's another thing, is that people's like, I tried to go keto for 2 weeks and it didn't work out. I was like, you need to give it 6 months, really, and commit to it for 6 months if you want to see any of the real overall benefits. You might see some quick weight loss, but in reality, if you want to see some life-changing appeal that a lot of people talk about with ketogenic diets, I recommend 6 months. You're in years. And your weight training performance has considerably increased almost uniformly.
A lot of that is like strength coming back to me. So, you know, I used to be really strong when I was a lot younger. But in the past 10 years, I haven't put up a lot of numbers because I was always in pain. Everything always hurt. You know, I have two fake hips. And so before I had fake hips, I could squat 500 pounds for 8 reps. I could do crazy stuff, you know, when I was younger. And I can't do those same kind of weights anymore, but I got my deadlift back up to, right now it's sitting at like 550.
Nice!
Which is all right for fake hips.
It's huge.
But I would like to get it higher. But I also am feeling the effects of that, because after a heavy deadlift day, it takes a while to recover. Now I'm thinking, you know, as a 46-year-old individual, like, is that even a good idea? Or, you know, is it good to push ourselves that far? Or am I going to do something to damage myself again and get hurt?
Well, I think it's about regulating the volume and intensity, and maybe it is good to push yourself like that once every 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's what
I was supposed to when we were 35 or 25. I could do
one
exactly
rep maxes. The conversation I had with myself on the way home from the gym. Maybe I should do this once every 2 weeks, because doing it every week is really damaging, mm-hmm. you know? And so that's how we learn, you know, we get in there.
Although it was your brother that convinced me to start lifting heavy weights again.
Yeah, but he's
and it helped. Things got better.
Yeah, yeah. I think Mark has this you know, innate ability to just, like, he loves training, but he's also found a lot in it. And I think he's found that every time he's been down and out and he returns to that it brings him somewhere else. It brings him to, like, a new spot. So, you know, our brother, Mad Dog, he passed away 10 years ago, and it was yesterday. It was 10 years ago yesterday he passed away. And Mark, just to challenge himself, said, I'm going to squat 600 at 6 a.m. for my brother. And he did it, you know. And so to me, that's really cool that he can still get at it. So he retired from powerlifting, and he'd squatted 1,000 pounds in a squat suit when it was, you know, geared and equipped, and he was on a ton of steroids and all that stuff like that. He squatted 1,080. But to see him squat 600 pounds in just a pair of knee sleeves, just because my brother inspired him, it's a really cool thing to see him be able to do that. And that
I did the same thing. Just wanted to let you know, just to honor your brother, I squatted 600 at 6 a.m. yesterday.
Hey, thank you, man.
No one was there.
Yeah, nobody saw it. And it wasn't on Instagram. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So, you know, just to be able to get back to the heavy weights and get, you know, give you something to look forward to or something to do, I think, you know, it's okay now and then, but I said maybe I might be doing it a little bit too much right now.
Well, and Drew suffers from that because Drew's a workaholic, and I don't want to speak for you, Drew, but Drew's a workaholic, and Drew's a type A dude, and so Drew's problem is I'm 60, I'm getting back into lifting heavy weights, which is probably a great thing, but now I'm training every fucking day, I'm deadlifting every other day and squatting every day, and I go, well, Drew, you can't take the Dr. Drew approach to lifting heavy weights. It's too taxing on the body.
You can't be a workaholic in the gym, really, and if you are, you have to find other things to get that energy out. You know, one of my favorite things now is just walking. I walk all the time because a lot of times I have a lot of creative energy too, like making films and stuff like that. So, you know, sometimes you got to get out of your house and you got to do something. So I think just, you know, going for a walk, we call it hashtag 10-minute walk, because what Mark and I do, and we learned this from our buddy Stan Efferding, is we walk for 10 minutes after each meal, which helps with your insulin sensitivity.
Absolutely.
Helps your body to
Conclusive and ample scientific proof. Your blood sugar regulation, insulin sensitivity is all.
We tell our diabetics to do that.
Yeah. So yeah, we just started like, hey, 10-minute walk. And, you know, our dad is the one that really got into it. He's always, after every meal, you know, he's 70 years old, he just goes out for a little walk around the block, and he takes our, you know, my nephew and his grandson with him a lot, and they just go for these walks. And I think that that's just a great way for people that aren't moving, for people that say that they're too busy. Everybody's got 10 minutes on the end of their lunch break to, like, go out and do a walk or whatever, right? So we just got to find time to do those things.
I've seen studies to back this up. It may be the most kinetically, bioengineering-wise, the most appropriate form of exercise for the human body.
Walking.
And as far as the absolutely devoid of downside. There's no pounding on the ankles, and there's no central nervous system overload. And the upside is there. It's tremendous, and it's shown that. I think it's a perfect adjunct to whatever you're doing.
Yeah, Hippocrates said it a long time ago. He said, walking is the best medicine, man's best medicine. Yeah.
That's why I love New York.
Yeah. I think that's actually that's actually true. Just getting out there and walking. I've actually stopped doing all steady state cardio. I was doing like an hour on the step mill a day, and I was killing myself. And I was, you know, I've actually seen better results by getting after it more in the gym with weight training and less with the cardio, and doing cardio still. I don't want to ignore that, but doing just my cardio just as walking.
Yeah.
I'm not really expending that much energy, which is also doing what? Not making me more hungry.
Right.
So a lot of people don't understand. They get on this steady state exercise for 45 minutes. Your body says, well, I got to get really good at this exercise, so I'm going to get prepped to do 45 minutes of just this stupid elliptical thing.
Dan John put it perfectly. He was talking about how body fat reduction is inefficiency. You know, burning body fat is about inefficiency of regulation of oxygen intake. And endurance aerobic exercise is the complete opposite. Mm-hmm. The more efficient you become at running, at jogging, at walking,
the less effect it's
going to have metabolically at burning body fat. You know, burning body fat is about inefficiency when it comes to, you know, oxygen consumption and things like that. So I think a lot of women in particular fall victim to that, where they just get addicted to burning 700 calories on a step mill and avoiding resistance training, and then they have no choice but they're going over on their calorie intake because they come home and they're fucking starving. Yeah. And you're starving and craving everything that you're not supposed to be eating. You know, no one gets. I'll speak for myself personally. I've never gotten back from Muay Thai or Jiu-Jitsu and just been fatigued and famished and just covered, dripping in sweat, and thought to myself, oh, nothing would sound better than chicken breast.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. You're starving for bread, and you get these incredible cravings for I don't know what it is chemically with that type of exercise that that does it for you, but yeah. You know, I can easily if I'm avoiding all other exercise and just lifting weights, I can easily just eat steak and be perfectly fine.
Yeah, and that's the kind of the good thing about the carnivore diet. People say, "Don't you get sick of it?" And I'm like, "Well, I only eat like twice a day, mm-hmm. so if I eat twice a day, by the time that I do eat, I'm starving because I haven't eaten all day, and I'm looking at a steak and it looks good and it tastes good, and then, you know, another 8 hours go by and then I have another meal, I'm hungry again.
Yeah.
I want to eat, and so I never really get sick of it.
What happens when you do and I know for a fact because you chronicle it pretty well on your Instagram, Big Strong Fast at Big Strong Fast on
sound like you said Big Fat Strong.
I did not no sir.
It's old days.
Big Strong Fast at Big Strong Fast on Instagram. You chronicle it pretty well. I don't see you falling off the wagon with any frequency, but when that does happen, when you do have a candy bar, how does that make you feel?
I actually do have some stuff off the diet here and there. I tell people all the time, there's a couple of things that I like, just a couple, like not a lot. But there's some things that I – every once in a while I'm like, man, I just want some blueberries. Mm. But I think blueberries are very good for you.
Absolutely.
So I'll go buy a thing of blueberries. And usually what I do is I just kill things at once. Like I'll buy a whole thing of blueberries. I'll crush it right there. Yeah. And it's done. It's gone. It's out of my mind. It's out of my craving, you know, category there. And I move on, you know, with just meat for a while. And then, you know, I'll crave something else. So every once in a while I'll have some fruit. There's a couple little keto snacks that I like. There's these bars. They're called Boo Bars, BHU. Have you ever tried that?
I've seen them, yeah. I haven't tried them. I've seen them.
Oh, my God. They're like these chocolate chip cookie dough bars. They're made with a vegan. They're actually vegan, and they're called Boo Bars, BHU. And I have never had a bar that tasted this good. And I tell people about them, like, why'd you have to tell me, man? I'm screwed now. Yeah.
Is it protein?
It's a keto bar. It's called Boo Keto.
High fat.
Yeah, but it's not, it's only 200 calories.
Yeah.
So I'll have two or three of them. But I'll just crush those and then they're
looking that up right now.
I'll crush them and then they're out of my system and then I don't have to worry about them. They make cookies and stuff too, but I don't know what the
fat fudge too. A friend of mine out in Venice makes the fat fudge. That's
Mary, like, right?
Yeah, she's Mary Shinoda.
See, I think stuff like fat fudge is actually healthy.
Yeah,
there's nothing. I think a Boo Bar is actually probably good too.
Yeah. What's in fat fudge?
Fat fudge is it's turmeric and some maca and some butter, some grass fed butter, and
no sugar.
No. I mean, I think they flavor it with, but they have a flavor it with Manuka honey, but they have a honey free version. Uh-huh. But fat fudge, I found to be a fantastic little treat.
I'm also a big fan of. I was always a fan of candy. Yeah. And so if I ever wanted to fall off the wagon and be like, oh, I gotta have candy.
How about Lily's chocolate?
I was going to mention Lily's chocolate's pretty good. I'm not really a chocolate guy. I used to like Sour Patch Kid and stuff. So they made these things called Smart Sweets.
Lily's chocolate, is that what I had last night?
Yeah.
Really
good. Smart Sweets are great. My daughter loves them.
Now, they're good, but I actually heard that they could raise your blood sugar.
Oh,
so
really?
I've seen people do some testing with them. I haven't tested them myself.
Without carbohydrates?
Yeah,
well, they have fiber in
them.
I don't know what they use.
How much is it going to raise your sugar?
It's a sweetener that's like some type of non-nutritive fiber.
I understand, but how much is it going to raise your sugar
that
matters?
Who did the testing was Dr. Anthony Gustin. He did it on his Instagram. He said it brought it to over 200 for a couple hours. And I was like, that sounds crazy. Yeah. So
and
I don't know. I'd have to check it myself.
These Boo Bars, there's all kinds of varieties.
Just get the Boo Keto chocolate chip.
Boo Keto. Okay.
It sounds like a martial art.
Peanut butter chocolate chip. Is that what you mean?
Just chocolate chip. Because don't get the regular. The regular ones suck. You have to get the refrigerated
keto ones.
It's not keto. That they suck. They're just not as good.
Yeah.
Refrigerated bars are where it's at. Those are the best.
Chris, we talked about how a little bit before the podcast how inspirational you have been to other people because that you've shown your before and after. You've shown the progress of you being considerably overweight and out of shape, and now deadlifting 550 and really muscular, lean physique. That you being inspirational to other people, does it in turn become inspirational back to you?
Oh, absolutely.
When you hear that you've gotten people motivated.
Yeah. Hold on. Before he answers, is it these?
No. Hold on.
That's a keto bar.
That's
a good time to – good way to spend the podcast,
BHU keto.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
But go ahead.
Keto
chocolate chip. Answer, Mike.
What were you saying?
I was saying that if you find that you have become an inspiration to others, does that in turn become more inspirational to you?
Yeah, I think that's what keeps me going.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of times – I don't know. I mean, I'm just like anybody else. There's so many days where I wake up and I'm like, I don't want to go to the gym today. I think what a lot of people don't understand, and one of the reasons why I take Kratom and I'll defend it all day long, is because when I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning a lot of days, it takes me until about 5:30 to just even be able to get moving. Like I'm a wreck when I wake up.
Yeah.
I feel like shit. And it takes
Is your sleep okay? Maybe I ought to get that looked at.
My sleep is good. Like I've been getting enough sleep, like time-wise.
But there's something wrong with your sleep mechanisms.
There could be,
yeah,
right? But I feel like when I wake up, you know, my back hurts, my knees hurt, like my ankles hurt, and I take Kratom, and that sort of starts getting me going. And it just takes a while for me to really get moving. I have to take a hot shower so I can get my joints moving. And everything just is
achy. Have you seen a rheumatologist ever to make sure you don't have some true inflammatory disease?
I have not, because I've always been told that I don't have rheumatoid arthritis from my normal blood test. But is there something else I should be looking at?
Well, there's things like that. I mean, there's Reiter syndrome and ankylosing spondylitis and crossover syromes.
I don't know. I'm just always in pain when I wake up. So it takes me a
while.
Are
you stiff also?
Pretty stiff.
Yeah. See, I have somebody, a rheumatologist, look. I mean, I almost hate to send you down that path because they sometimes over, you know, hammer, the whole world's a nail, right?
Sure.
But something to think about if you get really stiff.
I've always been trying to go to a doctor hoping that there was some sort of thing that comes out. And I think a lot of times, like, I'll go to the doctor and the doctor will be like, you're totally fine. My knees are so bad that some days I can barely walk, and I went to a doctor. He's like, "Yeah, your knees are a little arthritic, but there's nothing really wrong." I'm like, "There's something really wrong in there."
Well, it could be all soft tissue, right?
Yeah,
and not joint.
Yeah, so it's
hard. Soft tissues from the weightlifting.
Just haven't had anybody figure it out yet.
Right. It could be you suffer from the same problem that Drew has, and that your cock's too big.
Right? Yeah, and
it's
hard.
It's throwing off the balance of your entire body. Your hip girdle's all fucked up.
Right, to carry that forward. Yeah.
That's Drew's problem.
Tough on your knees.
Yeah. I don't suffer from that. So I've got zero weight in my pelvic girdle.
You got nothing.
So I'm perfectly fine, well balanced, and everything.
But yeah, you know, I think that the morning ritual of getting out of pain has. It's become a thing for me, though, and actually it's been really valuable. I think a lot of people should look into this if they're not doing it already. Wake up early if you can. Go to sleep early. Yeah. Mark, my brother Mark always says, set an alarm to go to bed, and I think that's a great idea.
When you have pain, does it ever get into the muscles or always over the joints?
It's always in the joints.
Joints.
Yeah. Seems so. Like my like when I sleep, I'm like the Tin Man.
So yeah, I go to
sleep and then it's like everything's locked up and then I wake up and it's like, you know, everything's kind of creaky and it takes a while to really get moving, you know, and once I get to the, it's funny, like once I get to the gym, I go to Gold's in Venice where this guy goes, where Mike goes, and once I get to the gym and I'm, you know, 20 minutes in on cardio,
you're fine.
Or something, like I'll go, like a lot of times I'll start out just walking, and then I'm completely fine. Everything loosens up, everything feels great, but it's a combination of all the different things that I'm doing, all the different protocols that I'm doing to get me there, you know?
Yeah, I've the same kind of feeling and the same cycle that you're experiencing, where you become motivational to someone else, that becomes motivational and back to you. That's a basis of recovery. That's 12-step there, right there. Is that I got clean, I go to meetings, I'd see someone who would motivate me, and then spend a couple, you know, and use that as inspiration. And you and
I look at it exactly
them.
The same.
And then
you know?
In turn, I get now I. 16 years in, 17 years in, I get people who are emailing me. They're like, you've become an inspiration to me. And I sponsor other kids. And it's this cycle of inspiration back and forth.
What's really crazy is getting people fired up who you really look up to.
Yeah.
Where they're like, holy shit, man, you're doing it. Like The Rock liked one of my posts. Like that to
me. Come on, that's awesome.
To me, like that's the nerdiest, coolest thing ever.
Fuck yeah, dude.
But, you know, I've been friends with him since 1999 from the Mecca, from Gold's.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, no problem.
I'm sure he's really easy to get a hold of.
I'd get him
an Uber.
Like that, and you know, guys that we looked up to as kids, seeing Ed Cohn, greatest power lifter of all time, you know, saying, hey, man, way to go. And he's got two fake hips also. He can still deadlift like probably 700. He's crazy. He deadlifted 900 pounds at 220. I've seen him do six
like,
something.
At like 58 years old or something.
He's
50
something, yeah.
Yeah.
But he's still he's strong as
champion.
Hell.
And guys like Mike O'Hearn. I mean, there's myriad people, especially around the Mecca there.
Mike O'Hearn's probably the most inspirational, like in like as far as personal friends go.
Yeah,
he's the guy that I draw the most from. You know why? Because I had issues with Mike O'Hearn for a while. We've always been close. We've always been good friends. But admittedly, for a while, I think I was just jealous of him.
Yeah.
He was always so awesome. He was always shredded, in great shape.
Allegedly without anything.
Yeah, and I'd always be like, screw that guy. You know what? But instead of and we were always friends, like, don't get me wrong. But, like, in a way, he's won me over time, seeing like how much – like it was actually when I started getting in shape when I really appreciated everything that that guy does and puts into himself. And I just realized that it's not necessarily discipline. He just cares about himself more than a lot of other people do, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that's what we need to do. We need to – I read an article called The Myth of Discipline by the late Charles Poliquin, and it says he says there's no such thing as discipline. It's all a matter of how much do you love yourself, and that made me frame it in a different way.
How much do you care? It's true.
Yeah, about how I feel about myself.
My jiu-jitsu coach of mine many years ago, he said – replace "I don't have time for" or any other excuse. Replace that with "I don't care enough," and notice how you change your perspective on things. Because the reality is if you don't make time to do things, if you don't go out of your way, if you don't sacrifice a little bit to do these things, the reality is you just don't care enough.
So I don't care enough to lose weight.
Yeah,
basically, like rather than saying I can't lose weight.
Sound like Adam Carolla now? That's his big pitch.
What?
You know, you forget where you put the keys every day because you don't care enough to remember to put them somewhere every day in the same spot.
Right.
If your life depended upon it, you'd get it. You'd
absolutely.
Remember it.
Absolutely. And the same thing, you know, I've, you know, where if a friend invites me to a birthday party or something and I go to myself, yeah, well, I didn't spend too much time with my daughter yesterday. I'm not going to go to it. And the reality is if someone asked me to go to the UFC at the Staples Center, I'd be like, oh, I'm there because I care. You know what I'm saying? And it's like reverse the way you look at things. It's really about how much you care about
anybody on Facebook asking questions?
Oh, sorry. I was doing something on Facebook. I was getting
– She's over there on social media.
I was over here, blood, sweat, and tears. I'm sorry. I wasn't watching that particular moment, but I will go back and look at it. we, you know, somebody was asking about protein powder, but I couldn't
protein
understand.
Powder.
Protein powder. I have an interesting thing about protein powder because I was just talking about that today.
Go ahead.
So,
do they use protein powder mainly to get protein from food? I don't know what
they were talking about. I would say avoid protein powders at all costs.
I'm with
unless
you.
You need it to supplement your diet because you're on vacation. Or,
I was
going to
say
know,
it's
traveling.
Yeah, it's managing.
I like protein bars as snacks, though.
But this is really important.
Terrible.
But
no,
it's really important
on my diet.
They're full of.
Well, I just said I like protein bars as snacks, but it's not a good option.
Well,
yeah.
Mike gave me one. Look at this one.
Hey, the Mark Sisson's Primal Bar.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Mark Sisson. He makes pretty good stuff. Yeah, but I'm saying like as your main source of food,
right.
It's
not
a good idea. It's a good idea to have those bars and have them in your cabinet for when you need them.
Yeah, but you bring an interesting point. When you are traveling, you have to plan ahead.
Yeah.
I use the elk bars from Onnit.
Oh, yeah.
So good.
The but dogs like
that. That's more. Yeah, but see, that's more of a real food.
I know. I think that's essentially
so the thing that people need to know about protein powder is it doesn't really have the thermic effect of food that a piece of meat would carry. So if you're going to eat a piece of steak, it takes your body some calories to expend to break that down. Yeah. And,
oh, really?
And it's much more satiating.
It's
a million
protein drinks like the one you get at Trader Joe's.
No,
the
don't. Stay away from
I
the
love
pre-
those.
If,
a
if
lot
it's
of
in
them
a can,
are,
pre-mix
I
and everything.
Love those.
Well, because they're probably very delicious.
Bottom line is
sometimes when I don't have time to eat, I just have one of those.
And that's okay. That's okay. That's what it's for.
Uh-huh.
You know, but I think
but
also
again, change I don't have time with. I don't care enough to get up 20 minutes earlier and make myself some egg whites.
Sometimes I'm just running around and I go, oh shit, I forgot to eat. And I just grab it and I run out the door and I jump.
The other option that you have, which is the best option, is the fast. Whenever you don't have something to eat or you forget to eat.
Don't.
Yeah, don't eat. And just go to your next meal. And people think, but I'm going to be so hungry. Just try it.
Yeah, like
if you're trying to be healthy and you're trying to get in shape, we know that caloric restriction works, and we know that it's
relatively good for you.
Remember what Mike Safe said too on our interview with him. He's like, learn to love that feeling of being a little hungry too.
Well,
because that prime it touches into something primal. Like instead of looking at it as like I'm going to be hungry, it's like learn to enjoy that though. Learn
that's a whole.
But actually, she just made a face like if I'm hungry, I'm blah.
Yeah.
But what ends up happening is you do get blah. But then
you break
but
through.
After you push through that, you start producing ketones.
Yeah,
ketones and epinephrine. Your adrenaline.
And then
comes
your body starts going like, I'm not even hungry. You've been really hungry, and then something happens, and you forget about it, and then you're like, I was really hungry a couple hours ago, but I didn't eat, and then I went past it, and now you're like, how come I'm not hungry? I was starving 2 hours ago.
That's true.
I didn't eat anything. It's because your body has shifted now into a different, you know,
state,
zone, basically,
yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
different
mm-hmm.
state, yeah.
No, that's how you lose weight.
Keep on it. Keep the mind sharp when it comes to the idea of it, because the number one problem I find with people who ask me health and fitness questions is when it comes to losing weight. It's like, what do I do about cravings? What do I do about being hungry? I go, fucking deal with it. That's part of the deal. That's part of understanding.
It's a really – but you talked about Safe's thing, which with the learn to like the hunger. There's a weird thing you can flip into that we worry about psychologically, psychiatrically, where deprivation becomes rewarding, addicting.
But it can't – but why is that, why is that
too,
bad?
Huh?
But why is that bad?
Well, that's where eating disorders come from. Where you start liking that you deprive yourself, and that's rewarding in some way.
I understand that, but somehow
it's one of the features.
Redemption through suffering can be a beautiful thing.
The point that you should be uncomfortable and so what is a perfectly good point.
Yeah,
discomfort is not people panic over any kind of discomfort. It's crazy. It like especially hunger.
Yeah.
So what?
I get really nervous about it, but I don't anymore. But I used to be like, what am I going to do? I'm going to get on a plane, and I'm going to go, and there's going to be no food there. And now it's like, I'll just get on a plane. I'll go, and I don't even think about it. And when the people come by with the peanuts and pretzels, I used to always just take them just in case.
Yeah.
I had never touched that stuff now because it's just not in my diet. You know?
Wow, you have a lot of control.
all of your – I can't recommend enough all of your films, honestly.
Oh, thank you.
Trophy Kids is just an exceptional film that really, I think, illuminates a big problem in this country. Of course, Bigger, Stronger, Faster. I always screwed up. Your original film, it's now become really a landmark documentary in the world of health and fitness. And then the newest one, Leaf of Faith. You do a great job of putting together those films, and you deserve to be applauded for that.
Thank you.
And Leaf of Faith is available now.
On Netflix, yeah.
Before you go, though, Kimberly Guerra has been asking questions, and I've been sort of passing over her.
She sounds like a hot chick.
Yeah. She,
all right, Kimberly.
Well, she has a lot of questions, but the last two were, she wanted to know if you fix both hips together or separate, but then her second question was,
not a bad question,
which is the most important of the five food groups?
Ah.
The food
animal
group,
protein.
But the food group thing is sort of,
yeah,
not a worthy.
Well, I would say, I'd have to say meat.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, yeah. Meat's where, so if you want to talk about what's the most important food group, it would have to be meat by far, because that's where, to me, that's where we get most of our nutrients from. But to other people, they might find it in the vegetable because they're a vegan, right? So
right.
It depends on where you're looking for your nutrients. Yeah. But if you do eat meat, I would say that meat would be first, and then you'd probably even go into like fruits, and then probably vegetables.
Oh, really?
And vegetables aren't really as nutrient dense. Like meat has, if you look at a nutrient density chart, kale's pretty high in a lot of nutrients. But it doesn't even come close to what beef has overall and what liver has overall, right. What shellfish have overall. So the amount of nutrients, vitamins and minerals and macronutrients that are in a piece of steak are going to far outweigh anything in the vegetable world. That's one thing that people need to know. Now, people will compare, like, you'll see these things where it's like, per ounce of this, per ounce of this, and it's like broccoli will be way above beef. But most of the people don't understand. It's like, we can't use a lot of that either. So what's absorbable? How much of the vitamins are absorbable? Yeah. There's going to be more absorbable vitamins and minerals out of a piece of meat than there will out of, you know, a vegetable, where our bodies are just adapted to that. Now, if we were an animal, we were a cow, and we had four stomachs, we'd be processing that in a different way. A lot of people don't know that herbivores actually eat a high-fat diet because they convert the carbohydrates in their stomach, they convert that into fat, which is kind of a crazy thing. So even like a rabbit is on essentially a high-fat diet by the time it processes it. So that's why we see the fats being good in humans.
Well, what about legumes?
Legumes?
Yes.
I mean, what about them as far as being important?
That's protein too.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're okay. They're not going to give you
the same
full, complete.
Close,
well, you can use the great vitamin company that we have.
I know, but protein efficiency ratio. And I'm not certainly talking bad about a sponsor or in any way trying to disparage the idea of using supplemental vitamins and minerals to help fill gaps in the diet. A lot of people are vitamin D deficient. Calcium can be great. But there's a reason why they're called supplements, because it should be supplemental to things that you're getting from your diet. Always, always, always look to get things from real, actual food. Always.
And I think
that's my big rub against protein powders too, circling back to the last question. People, you know, I think bodybuilders have created this narrative that it's something essential. You're talking about people who are eating eight times a day and they have to get 350, 400 grams of protein.
Yeah.
It's impossible for them sometimes to be able to eat enough food. The average human, even a high training human, does not need protein powder. Let's be very clear, you know.
Mm. Yeah, it's a good convenience.
Although I know, you know, there are people that have trouble gaining weight, right?
Yeah.
And that's not any of us, but one of our sons is a little bit that way, and he uses protein to help him. Because people, that group of people tend to get nauseated when they eat.
And then we call that a tool, right? Yep. And I think that's what supplements
are. I've been
are.
Calling Dr. Drew's son a tool for a long time.
It's true, yeah.
Well,
both of them, I think.
but we utilize protein powder as a tool, as a vehicle to get us somewhere, not as the main thing getting us there.
Susan, Paulina tweeted something the other day that offended poor Mike.
It didn't offend me. I was laughing.
I was like, how could he get offended?
I was laughing. I just was wondering where I came into the scheme of things. How come I got caught in the crossfire?
What was it?
She said, my dad always warned me to stay away from men until they're about 30. If I ever stop believing him, I just look to Mike Catherwood to remind me.
Think about Mike Catherwood.
But what did I?
Drew, have you ever tried Kratom?
No, never tried it.
Would it be something you ever try or not?
I try it. I'm not afraid of it. Opiates, anything opiate makes me feel horrible.
Huh,
I'm wired up that way.
But the weird thing about Kratom...
It's hard to believe for somebody that likes them.
Yeah.
Right? My patients always look at me like, what?
Hey,
it's impossible.
I don't like them anymore. Let's get
no, but having liked them, you know what I mean?
I'm a desperate drug addict. I didn't like them.
I'm the bottom of the barrel drug addict, and I
you
the
did heroin though, right?
Yeah, but the only way I could do it is if I smoked it with crack. Yeah, I had to mix it with cocaine, and I loved that. That was manna from heaven. When I started speedballing, that was that was like where everything came into picture. but you know, like slamming heroin or smoking heroin, I just was like, I really didn't like drooling on myself and fucking sitting around doing nothing. I wanted to be up.
I always wish that about alcohol because I had a worse problem with alcohol than I did even with opioids. Yeah. Where I was like, man, I just wish I didn't like this.
Yeah.
I'd have friends that say, I drank and I get sick. And I'm like, man, I wish I did.
Yeah, see, I'm sort of a lightweight. And I don't like all these things. They don't make me feel, they feel bad. I tried CBD because I think low-dose CBD I might be okay with. But the high dose had weird reaction to also. By high dose, I mean like 20 milligrams. So, you know, everyone's different. You got to figure this out. This is exactly where we started our conversation. If we could figure out the right patients for the right stuff, we'd be way ahead of this.
What do you think they should do with kratom, the government?
Study it. I mean, they should study everything. There's nothing they shouldn't be studying that could help people. Mm-hmm. That's it. I mean,
but a while back, you didn't like it.
Well, I was worried about it because here's where my position has changed a little bit. It's a weak opiate. And so I was in the position that an opiate addict should not be exposed to an opiate, period. But we have created new categories of addiction with all this what we call iatrogenic use of the dry. You know, I was seeing real drug addicts still in my work. And I'm realizing that there is a ton of people out there that aren't like Bob Forrest or Mike Catherwood-style drug addicts that are strung out on opiates and also have pain. And that's a different, like we said, a different kind of patient that needs a different kind of intervention. And it might include cannabis. It might include kratom. So it's not it's a new kind of patient we've created that we didn't even see before.
Yeah,
because we've used so damn many opiates.
I'd love to get you to talk to Dr. McCurdy out of University of Florida, who's doing all the studies.
Cause I love
talking to him. I think what we need to do is get people like you guys together, so you could have an intelligent conversation. I'm just a filmmaker. I just find things and say, "Oh, this is interesting. Let's put a spotlight on it." You know, but I think that people like you and Dr. McCurdy can help make sense of this issue, you know?
Yeah.
So I'd love to hook you up with him and introduce you to him.
I agree. Here's your product coming in from the producer. Want to talk about this?
Yeah, this is Urban Ice Kratom. This is Green Malaysian. There's some different strains. That's Red Bali. And so there's different strains of it, but basically it's just where it's grown and dried. What's interesting about this is there's two alkaloids in it that are powerful. There's metragenine speciosa, and there's another one called 7-hydroxymetragenine. And the 7-hydroxymetragenine is just a result of the drying process. It's an oxidative process that happens when they dry the plant. Mm-hmm. They don't find it in the fresh leaf. Mm-hmm. And the 7-hydroxy is the only part of the plant that's actually addictive. Hmm. The metragenine part isn't. So when they can isolate that alkaloid and be able to utilize that, that would be great. But the problem is if you take the alkaloid out, then the FDA has a completely different problem with it. Now it's, now it's a new drug and blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of issues with it that we just have to get over before we can just study it, you know, sort of full on. And
well, I hope that some of the groups that are funded are free to study it the way they should study it. I mean, whatever that means.
Just University of Florida is leading the charge. Dr. McCurdy down there and the American Kratom Association is a place where people can go for information.
Outstanding.
Awesome. Chris, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, man.
Awesome, man.
Anything
Thank
we you. Can do to help further the things going Thank on in your buddy. Life, we're always you're always welcome here.
All right.
Hey, everybody. It is the Swole Patrol Podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Mike Catherwood. And Dr. Drew is at Dr. Drew, of course. Join the email list today. Send your questions. drdrew.com/contact. And put Swole at the top of the email so we can get your comments. And this will get you a weekly email reminder with a link to this show and all the great shows that Dr. Drew and I do and all the shows that Dr. Drew does by himself and, of course, with Adam Carolla, the great Ace Man. Please tell a friend and subscribe on iTunes. Don't forget to rate us 5 stars and on Podbean or Google Play. All 3 help us out. We also are on YouTube/Dr. Drew and hope you can give us all your comments, even if you're a troll and you want to destroy our feelings and our emotions. Support our sponsors and the show. Click on the banners on drdrew.com for the links for special discounts for the products Dr. Drew and I endorse 100%. Send questions and comments to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Swole Patrol Podcast, or on Twitter @Swole Patrol Pod. And be good, be swole, #Swole Patrol.